So this should be Le'iloi Nishmas, Devorah Bas Nachum, Shmuel Ben David, Esther Bas Pesach, Miriam Rezel Bas Baruch Avraham. And if I can add, Abimo Ri Harachayim Yol Ben Harav Yosef, Abimo Rasi Yuma Shoshana Bas Rav Avraham Arye, and Shifra Yuchadis Bas Rav Nisan Av Yosef, and Fega, oh, that's on the top, and Le'iloi Nishmas, Fega Rifka Bas Harav Shraga Feivel HaKohen. Feitel HaKohen. Okay. So all of this Torah learning should be Le'iloi Nishmas, all of these people. And the chus of all of the Harbatas Torah that you facilitate, that all the sponsors facilitate, thank you very much. And it should be as a chus for you and your families. Okay, so the topic today is Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a week away. We know that there are no texts that tell us about the story of Hanukkah, no texts in Torah Shebiksav. We don't have a Megillah of Hanukkah. But there are hafachba v'hafachba dekula ba. You look inside the Torah Shebiksav and you can find anything. We can find direction for how to lead our lives, how to interact, how to deal with particular circumstances and situations. Hafachba v'hafachba dekula ba. And when it comes to Hanukkah, if we dig deep enough, Chazal have helped us find allusions and references to Hanukkah within the Torah Shebiksav, hints that will reverberate throughout the generations. So let's start at the very beginning. And no, I'm not going to break out in song like Julie Andrews. Have no fear. So, beginning. Bereishis bara Elokim es ha-shamayim ve-es ha-aretz. The very first pasuk that we have in the Torah. In the beginning, where's my source sheet? Here it is, sorry. Bereishis bara Elokim, source number one. Ve-ha-aretz ha-yisa sohu ve-bo ve-choshek al p'nei sahom. There was derab, astonishing darkness. There was isolation and darkness on Al Kanes at home, on the depth, on the great expanse. And we know very famously that the Medrash tells us in Gracious Rabbah that Tohu is referring to Bavel, Bohu is referring to Madai, Choshech is referring to Yavan. All of these descriptions of darkness are referring to the different time periods that Klal Yisrael will have to go through, all of the Golios that Klal Yisrael will go through. And in source number two, Choshech ze Golus Yavan, Shehechshichu Einehim Shel Yisrael B'Gzeirosehen, Shehayisa Omeres Lahem, Kisvu Al Keren Hashar, She'ein Lachem Chelek Be'elokei Yisrael. So the beginning of the Torah where creation is described and the complete darkness is described, we have an allusion to the preamble of the Hanukkah miracle, namely that the Greeks darkened the eyes of Bnei Yisrael. They wanted to bring confusion and doubt, and they insisted that the Jews write down on the keren of the shar, on the horn of an ox, Ein lachem chelek b'elokei Yisrael, you have no portion with God. This is the precursor to the yellow star, to the dunce cap that the Jewish people had to wear in the Middle Ages, that the anti-Semites made us wear, was the horn of this ox that brazenly proclaimed that we have to sever that connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no such thing as this relationship as Bnei Yisrael being the Am HaNivchar. That was the overall decree. The so-called enlightened Greeks prohibited Torah study, which is compared to light. So this Hechshichu es Einehem Shel Yisrael, this was the overall mantra of the Greeks, that we want to darken your eyes with confusion. We want to darken your eyes so that you are not allowed to engage in Torah study. And we know they forbade Shabbos, Bris Milah, and Rosh Chodesh, the foundational mitzvos of Klal Yisrael. They also attacked the integrity and the sanctity of the Jewish home and the respectability of the Jewish home when they insisted that any Jewish kala, this was a horrible decree, had to be with a Greek soldier on their wedding day, on their wedding night. So this is Hechshichu es Einehem Shel Yisrael. But that preamble and that darkness led to the Chashmonaim finding avenues to illuminate the darkness. We know that they risked their lives and they hid within the mountains of Judea and Modi'in, and they hid so that they could practice and they could learn their Torah from the light of that Torah. They could enlighten their lives at the risk of being killed. And as a result, the next pasuk that we have, Vayehi Ar, there was light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided the light up for the Chashmonaim in the form of that jug of oil that lasted, that allowed the light to last for 8 days. There was darkness, v'choshech al p'nei sahom, v'yehi ar. And many mefarshim, the Shlach included, says that the word ar is the 25th word in the Torah. Count it, I did. It is the 25th word of the Torah. So we have choshech al p'nei sahom, referencing the Greeks, relating to the Greeks. And then we have the ar, the 25th word of the Torah, relating to the 25th day of Chodesh Kislev, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought light to the Hashmonaim, to the Jewish people. Why the horn of an ox? There are many explanations as to what this means, that they have to engrave it on the horn of an ox. We went through some of them a couple years ago. You can look it up. There is a share, I think, on Torah Anytime that we spoke about the significance of the horn of an ox relating to Yosef, relating to Teva. We're not going to discuss that. But I'm going to just point out one idea that I saw in a couple of Sfarim. A couple of Sfarim bring down that Rav Lev Gorowitz, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Gateshead, visited a museum with ancient Greek artifacts. And one of those artifacts were ancient baby bottles that were fashioned out of horns, out of animal horns. And it is said, he said at that moment when he saw it, he said, ah, now I understand one of the intents of this medrash, where it says that they had to engrave on the horn of an ox that Yisrael. What does this mean? He understood the intent of the medrash, that the Greeks were so consumed with wiping away the Jewish identity that the campaign began at birth. Right? The Greeks did not have any issues with Torah Shebiksav. The Greeks had issues with Torah Shebaalpeh, with Mesorah, with passing it on from one generation to the other, writing it on the Keren of the Shor. Sorry, the Keren Hashor, the ox's horn, which can be utilized as a baby bottle, signified that from the very young age, don't think that you have any chelek. Stop with your chinuch and stop with your indoctrination of your children. And I did look it up in ancient baby bottles. Indeed, many things were used with animal horns. One of those was baby bottles. They poked a hole at the bottom and they poured the milk in. So the difference between the two cultures was so subtle because of this intellectual quality that the Greeks had, right? We know that they focused on art, they focused on, on beauty, on architecture, right? This was, Rabbi Belsky points out, this was a natural draw for the Jewish people, right? And slowly they succumbed and they slowly adopted their mode of behavior. Hekshichu means that there was confusion, because when there's darkness, you cannot differentiate between objects. You can't distinguish one thing from another. So Yavan had the power to confuse, and as such, it represented darkness. Because when you consider the Yavanim and versus the Hashmonaim, and when you look at the Hashmonaim's effort against them, we really have to understand what exactly was this battle about. As we know, it was not a war about physical protection necessarily, because were the Jews to disregard their religion and adopt their way of life, they were promised protection. But what happened was, for some, this was a very confusing time, because indeed, they didn't look so dangerous to them, right? It was confusing. Who's the enemy? Are they the enemy or not? But then what happened? Sorry, hi, how are you? I get so distracted easily, I'm sorry. Especially from people that I like so much. How are you doing? So what happened is, so they were in a state of confusion. Who's the enemy? Are they the enemy or not? And those that maybe were grappling with decisions, what happens when you have this really difficult decision? You're confused. You have the sense of confusion. So the decision for them was very, very difficult to make. Do I risk my life and learn Torah and keep my way of life? Or do I just succumb to something that's very alluring? This is the idea of hechshichu. For some, the choice was very, very difficult, and we never want to be in that situation. And for some, like the dedicated and intensely devoted Hashmonaim, the choice was very clear. They took the offensive to eradicate the enemy that was a threat to their religious principles. But what was at the core of this viciousness of the Greeks? And in truth, why were they at such odds with the Jewish people? So Rav Pinkus explains that when comparing the Greek and Jewish culture, as we said before, there was an allure because there were a lot of similarities, right? Both value education and expansion of the mind, and both value beauty, right? Yavan is known for its beauty. There's a Gemara that says, Tishin Kavim, Asar Kavim Yofi Yardula Olam Tishanat La Yerushalayim. Right, there's 9 points or 9 epitomes of beauty, and ten epitomes of beauty, and 9 of those were given to Yerushalayim. So we know that the Jewish religion values many of the things that the Greeks supposedly value: education, expansion of the mind, intellectual pursuits. Right. In addition, Rav Pinkus points out, we look at another allusion to Hanukkah in the Torah. In source number 3, at the very, very beginning, the ancestors of Yavan, of course, was Yafes. The Pasuk tells us in source number 3, Vayikach Shem v'Yafes ez hasimla, v'yisimu al shechem sheneihem, v'yachul achronis v'yipasuas ervas avihem. We know that they both worked in unison. Shem, the ancestor of the Jewish people, Yafes, the ancestor of Yavan, they initially worked in unison to cover the nakedness of their father. They worked as a partnership. Furthermore, he points out very interestingly, the Jews have been identified by the symbol of the menorah, which is lit by olive oil, with olive oil, and the Greek symbol is an olive branch. So we see that there really is this connection or this partnership in its ideal state between Shem and Yafes, between the Jew and the Greek. Furthermore, in source number 3, Pasuk Chaf Zayin, in Parshas Noach, Yaf Elokim liYafes v'yishkon ba'ahalei Shem. This is the ultimate partnership. After they cover their father's nakedness, Noach gives them each a blessing. The blessing is that Yaf Elokim liYafes, literally it means that you should spread out, meaning your dominion, and you should have physical possessions, but of course it comes to the lesson of Yafes, Yafet, Yafet, beauty, that you should sort of have the, you know, you should be known for its beauty, and v'yishkon ba'ahalei Shem, that beauty should dwell within the house, within the tents of Shem. So clearly there is a connection, there is some sort of synergy that happens in its ideal state between the ideals of Yafes and the ideals of Shem. So on the surface, there's very little difference between the two. And that's what allured, that's what drew some of the Jews to the Greeks. But as the campaign of Hellenization spread and it infiltrated into the Jewish way of life, the differences became very, very apparent. The beauty, because what happened is, first of all, when the Torah was translated into Greek, what happened was that it exposed the world to the Torah Shebik Sav. And the Greeks now looked at the Torah and they took it, some of it out, you know, they took it out of context. They sort of skewed it and they spinned it and they took it out of context. And they looked at our Torah, and they said, you know what, we're supposed to have the monopoly over civilization, over intellectual pursuits. We're supposed to have this monopoly. And now they looked at the Jewish people. Once they saw the Torah Shebik Sav, Rabbi Stolper brings this down in his book. Once they saw this, they realized they are a threat. The Jewish people are a threat to our desire to take over and to have dominion over everybody in terms of intellectual sophistication and civilization. Because they saw, you know, there's something very noble about these people. There's something, they're very interested in intellectual pursuits. Furthermore, the beauty and the chachma that the Greeks so connected to seemed to be an end in and of itself versus a means towards an end. And that's what the chashmonaim, and that's what the people that resisted the Greek culture understood. The Greeks looked at the superficiality, at the beauty as an end in and of itself, as opposed to looking at it as a means towards an end. And Rav Pinkus brings an interesting pasuk, very interesting idea he brings in source number 4. In source number 4, he says, "Oraticha banayach Tzion al banayach Yavan v'samticha kecherev gibor." I will awaken your sons, Tzion, on the sons of Yavan. And what he says is, this is the dichotomy. This is Tzion, Yerushalayim, pitted against Yavan. And he says, if you look at the word Tzion and Yavan, they are the same words with the exception of the tzadi, or tzadik. Tzadi, representing a tzadik. Tzadi, yud, vav, nun, versus yud, vav, nun. And he says the attitude, as represented by the tzadi or tzadik, is what differentiates us from the Greek culture. It's very, very subtle, but it runs very deep. The beauty of Yafes is superficial, and the beauty of Tzion with the tzaddik is relating to the panemius, is relating to something internal. The beauty is used, the beauty that we look at and that we are attracted to should be for the purpose of drawing us inward, to drawing us towards the real essence of the matter. And let's look at this a little further. When we look at our approach versus the secular approach, or in this case, the Greek approach, we can say that Gashmias beauty is in the realm of the Greeks, of the secular culture, and spirituality is in the realm of the Jew. We look at the Greek culture, and they valued the body, and they valued architecture, but they were so involved in the physicality that every single enterprise that they did involved admiring the human body, so much so that there was so much erva, there was so much the immorality that went on, whether it was the games, the Olympic Games, and their pantheons, and even the Greek mythology is full of immorality, right? Everything, the sports, it focused on the human body to such an extent that it became immoral. And in their mind, okay, the Jews' focus was spirituality. And this was why Rav Pinchas says there was such a dissonance with when the Greeks looked at really what the Jew was about. Because they could, says Rav Pinchas, they could not wrap their head around the fact that the Jews have this magnificent structure called the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews have the Kohen Gadol, who is adorned with this regal clothing, with this magnificent gems. What is that all about? We have all the beauty. Our approach is beauty. Your approach is spirituality. But what they didn't realize is that the Jew is able, as we know, to take anything physical and elevate it for the purpose of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, in our ideal state, we do not put on monk's clothing, and we don't wear habits, and the holy among us get married and have children. Right? We have a symbiosis. There's a synergy between the physical and the spiritual. The Hashmonaim brought this novel idea to the Greeks, and they did not like it. This is how we can understand, says Rav Pinchas, that Hanukkah is not quite a moed. It is the holy week, or over a week, within chol. Right? We don't have to refrain from work. And the idea, it's a very, very deep concept, says Rav Pinchas. It's a beautiful idea. It represents our ability to establish Kedusha, to establish some sort of moed within the chol. This was done in the hands of the Chachamim. But this represents the idea that we can take chol and we can elevate it. Hanukkah represents that idea. Even within the chol, or in this case we could say the extreme form of chol, namely darkness, we have an ability to elevate the darkness. You know, when you look at Inyana D'Yoma, and you look at a lot of the Sfarim that talk about Inyana D'Yoma, a lot of the Musar Sfarim sort of ask this very similar question with every Yontif. When it comes to the enemy of Klal Yisrael that we overcame, and we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether it's the Mitzri, the Greek, Amalek, they always ask the question of, do we have some of the Amalek in us? Do we have some of the Yavani in us? Do we have some of the Mitzri in us? Because the avoda of the day really is to exercise, so to speak, is to is to get rid of that enemy, quote unquote, that is within us. So he asked this question as well. Rav Pinchas says, do we have some of that Yavani, some of that Greek culture within us? He says our service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have some of it, because our service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu has two components. It has the Yofi part of it. It has the yofes part of it, the beauty of the mitzvot and how we beautify them. But we also have to make sure that that's not where it ends. We also have the shame part of us. Yaf elokim liyafes v'yishkon be'ohalei shame. That beauty, that superficial beauty is used to what? To go inside the tents of shame. It is to bring out our panemius, or is to dig deep and to find our panemius. It represents shame. The panemius represents shame. And what he says is, it's the emotional investment that we place into the mitzvos. So that silver esrog box, or that beautiful menorah that's prominently displayed in our windows, that is the yafes part of it. That's the yafes part of it. But it's what we invest in those mitzvos. It's the emotion that we put into those mitzvos. That is the shame part of us. And as we said before, the difference between Yavan and Sion, two major forces in the world, is the tzadi or the tzadik. And he says, tzaddik be'emunaso yichyeh, as it says in Chavakuk. The defining characteristic of a tzaddik is chiyos, he says. It's the life, it's the emotion, it's the investment that we put into our mitzvah observance. So, when we do our mitzvahs, is it mitzvahs on a shimelu mada? Do we do our mitzvahs by rote? Do we say, we got that over with? I'm glad I don't have to do that chesed, I'm yotzizayin, I'm putter. You know, or do we put our chiyus into our mitzvah observance? The tefillah that we do, are we yotzezayin the tefillah, or are we like David HaMelech that tries to invest some emotion into it? V'ani tefillah. Dov, the ultimate tefillah is that you become one with your tefillah. This is tzadik ve'emunah so yichyeh. It's the chiyus. It's the difference between Sion and Yavan is the tzidkus that we put into it. When we do mitzvahs with our chiyus, this is the Yavan side of us taking over. And when we do mitzvahs with chiyus, this is the shame part of it. Two people, he says, can perform the same act, and one of those acts, we go through the motions and we get through the day, but the other we can infuse with such a deep emotion. And if we go back, and really, why is that? Because the point of beauty is to draw us inward. That's the point of beauty. It's to get to the essence of the matter. And again, if we go back to another origin of Chanukah, Yafta Lokim Liyafes, I think it's Rashi that asks the question, why is it that the reward of Yafes, says Rashi, was that he got burial. Somehow burial is associated with Yafes as his reward. And the reward for his act in covering his father's erva, and the reward for shame was tzitzis. Why do they have two different rewards? One is after death, one is during life. And the answer is because they both did the exact same act. One infused that act with emotion and energy, and the other was yotzezayin, as we say in French. The other one just got through the day and did it because he had to do it. That's the difference. And that's the difference between the yavan side of us and the shame side of us. The purpose of beauty is to draw us inward. The purpose of beauty is to look at something in a superficial way and say, wow, I want to get to know that thing a little bit better. And Rav Pinkus brings the idea of an apple. You look at an apple and that beautiful red apple is so enticing. We don't really want the peel of the apple. We want what's inside of that apple. So another interesting idea as well that relates to Bereishis as well. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created light, we know Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had this special light, very, very piercing light that went from one end of the earth to the other, whatever that means, for 36 hours. And it was put away. It was called the Or HaGanuz. It was put away for Tzadikim. Those 36 hours relate, says the Shlah, to the 36 candles that we light on Hanukkah. What does one have to do with the other? Well, the Or HaGanuz can be extracted at certain times of our lives, at certain periods of history. When we talk about light, that light illuminates something that we cannot see. It gives a definition to things in a superficial way. But when you talk about that Or HaGanuz, that is a light that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put away for the tzaddikim because it is a penetrating light. It's something that allows the essence of something to be seen. I know it sounds a little esoteric, but we'll get a little bit more practical. And what he says is that we've had instances of being able to extract or tap into that Or HaGanuz during our times of history. For example, the Beis HaMikdash had some of that Or HaGanuz, meaning there was something supernatural. There was something that we can see inside the depth, something extremely spiritual. And the menorah and the Torah. What does the Torah do? The Ner Mitzvah of the Torah are. Torah is the ultimate light. Because what it does is it allows us not to just see things in a superficial way, but allows us to dig deeper. It's like X-ray vision, like that Or HaGanuz that was put away. So that's what, when we say Ner Mitzvah of the Torah are, and the menorah represents the Torah, and we're talking about Hanukkah relating to the R, we are talking about the ultimate R, the quintessential R. Because the R in its ideal state doesn't just shed light on something superficially. It sheds light on things internally. It sheds light on our essence. And I think that we can maybe say, and we can jump and make sort of a leap. I don't know if it's such a leap. That maybe we can say that one of, perhaps, the strengths of Hanukkah is to be able to look at things beyond the surface. To look at things beyond the surface, whether it's investing our mitzvah observance with things other than just getting by and just getting it over with and just beautifying it, but we look at what we're doing, what we're investing in our mitzvah observance. Or we can say when it comes to interpersonal interactions, are we looking at people in a very superficial way? Do we make judgment calls after 3 minutes of talking to a person and we make complete judgment calls about their entire essence, their entire personality without even knowing? I was telling you, I have two daughters in Shidduchim now. Baruch Hashem, they are beautiful girls. But you know, you hear about people that are in the Shidduch world and they want pictures and they want this and people are making decisions based on pictures. What have we turned into that our decisions have become so superficial? Everything is superficial. Perhaps we can say that one of the strengths of Hanukkah is Ner Mitzvah V'Torah is and looking at V'Yafta Lokim L'Yafas V'Yashkon L'Ahal Hashem, that superficiality, that superficial beauty is there to draw us inward. Like that beauty of the Beis HaMikdash was there to draw people inward and connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a pasuk in Shir HaShir, which is not on your sheets, that tells us, and the Sefer Yalkut L'Kaftov brings this idea. Hadudaim nasnu reyach, ve'al pesachenu migadim. The flowers have brought forth their aroma, and on our entrances, good-smelling or good-tasting fruit. And the Yalkut L'Kaftov brings this notion that al pesachenu migadim is referring to the neros of Hanukkah, which we put meikar hadin, we're supposed to put the Hanukkah menorah by our doorposts. And he explains what this idea of al pesachenu migadim. Why is it that we put this menorah on our doorposts? Why is it that we are mefarsem this nes? It's not like we're mefarsem the nes of, you know, of Kriyas Yamsuf. We're not mefarsem it in this way. So he says, he points out that we know that we have two distinct reasons for Hanukkah. One was the military victory that was clearly a miracle on the battlefield, a victory that was won outside, and it was experienced in the outer realm, and the other miracle was experienced in the inner realm, within the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, first of all, you can ask the question, why is it that we needed this miracle of the oil to begin with? Wouldn't it have been enough to have a military victory? We won. We're able to do what we need to do now. Why was there a necessity, or was there a necessity, to have this miracle of the oil? So first of all, one answer that's been discussed is the fact that when there was a military victory, people can right away immediately assume, you know what, it wasn't a miracle. It happened. You know, it's a guerrilla warfare. They had amazing strategists. They had brilliant minds. And sometimes with guerrilla warfare, you can win a vast, huge army, even though that army was full of legions and legions of terrifying soldiers with spears and armor and the ancient day tanks of the time, the elephants, right? I mean, it was an imposing force, but still there will be those that say, it happened. You know, Olam Kamin Hagona, hey, this is what happens in war. So in order to bring credibility to the fact that this was a nace, this was indeed a miracle, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made another nace within the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Furthermore, this nace in the Beis HaMikdash, that was the oil, was very subtle, it was very quiet, and would we not have heard about it from the people that actually experienced it firsthand, we would not have even known about it. It really was a nace nistar. It was a hidden miracle. Not in the classical sense that we think of as a nes nistar, where a nes happens within teva. This was lamala min teva, but it was a nes that happened binistar. It happened within the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. And the avoda of the day is to reenact this nes nistar by lighting our menorah b'farhesia for everybody to see. And the reason, why do we do this? Why do we have to light it for everybody to see? So first of all, we can look at the Cheshvanotim that fought on this battlefield. They fought, they won the war. And we know that this war, as we said, was not about physical property. It was about their Jewish identity and their ability to continue learning and to facilitating the growth of Torah within their families, within their nation. So really, after this military victory, what did they do? They didn't fire cannons. They didn't have parades. What did they do? Their first act was to go inside the Beis HaMikdash. It was outside, and then they brought it internally into the Beis HaMikdash to show that our battle was about serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and connecting. And the Rav Yerucham, the late Mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva, says this was a way of showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw the dedication of the Cheshvanotim, that you had pure motivations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed them to find this pure flask of oil, and allowed this miracle to happen to show that, yeah, it wasn't enough for me to help you win the military victory. I'm going to give you this extra level of love. I'm going to give you a kiss on your cheek. This is that extra kiss on the cheek, like a mother cleaning off a child. It's enough if she takes care of the child's needs, cleans them off. But when a mother gives a kiss, that shows that she's the mother. This miracle of the oil is that neshika, is that kiss from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it wasn't enough to just have the military victory. I want to show Klal Yisrael that I'm there with you. I am your parent, and I want to show this extra level of ahava towards you because you showed this extra dedication towards me. It was lefarsem es hanes. Why? Because remember we started off at the beginning. What did we have to proclaim? Ein lanu, ein lachem chelek be'elokei Yisrael. Now we take those menorahs and we put them, right? We put them at our doorposts and we are proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu does have a special relationship with us. Yesh lanu chelek be'elokei Yisrael. We can ask the question, in a time of peace, can a soldier win the Medal of Bravery? Can he win any kind of bravery medals? Can a soldier who has never been in dangerous, life-threatening situations on the battlefield, can he become a decorated soldier? The answer obviously is no. Think about a soldier in a war, in combat, in one act of bravery that can last maybe 15 minutes, this person can become a decorated war hero. Because what happens is, in an instant, he's able to take all of his basic training and all of his knowledge and demonstrate his ability in real time when it was most needed. And says Rav Pinkus, think of the acts of bravery that we have shown through periods of darkness. It is that very darkness that allows us to show our greatness. Without the darkness, we can't even exhibit our greatness. That's why you see, he says, there's so many stories of during the Holocaust when people are literally risking their lives in order to save others or risking their lives to do mitzvahs, whether it's finding a little piece of grease to light the Hanukkah candle or finding some crude flour and oil to make a crude kind of matzah, right? What he says is this is, during a time of darkness, there are those who are able to really muster up all their resources and display their heroism. And it's the darkness itself, it's the Yisurin that bring out the light. And he says in his beautiful words, as Rav Pinkus, mi shalom minatzel es hachoshech, someone that doesn't take advantage of that darkness, meaning you're in a situation anyway. Are we going to fall, no fail b'tahom? Are we going to fall into that tahom, into that depth, into that isolation? Or are we going to take advantage of it and show our strength and take advantage of the fact that we have what it takes? So the Chashmonaim were the small group of untrained people. But it was that darkness when it came to a head and they said there is no choice, otherwise we're going to fall deeper and deeper. It was that darkness that brought out their heroism. That one jug of oil that lasted represented their unbelievable determination and mesiras nefesh. Just like physical warfare can transform an ordinary person into a decorated war hero, we also have ability to display our spiritual heroism at times of darkness. And we know that today we seem to be, unfortunately, descending quickly into darkness vis-a-vis our value system. And I need not go into detail. So much of the home that people are considered as immoral if they defend the traditional family values. It's an olam hafuch that we are living in. It's mind-boggling when you think about it. It is absolutely mind-boggling. So sometimes when we're in the middle of darkness, sometimes that's exactly the time that we have to show our heroism. And sometimes speak our mind or be vigilant and resist the temptation of complacency. A few weeks ago at work, I work in a special needs school. We had a workshop from a firm man. I'm not sure if he was from Lakewood or Bar Park. He's a social worker that's sort of on the lecture circuit, and he was talking about communication in the workplace. And before he started, he said that, you know, he was invited. He's on the lecture circuit all over, apparently, and he was invited to speak in a public school in the city. And he took the job, but he was told before he came, he said, I just want you to know that when you give this workshop, you may not use gender identifying pronouns. Mm-hmm. So he said, thank you, but no thank you. To me, that was like an act of heroism because he didn't succumb. I'm sure he gave up a lot of money for this lecture, and he didn't. This is sometimes when we're in the midst of darkness, that's when sometimes we can light. You know, the light is not really... We don't really benefit from light unless it's dark, right? We don't really see the benefit of that light until we are in the middle of darkness. So the question is, where did the Hashmonaim inherit this bravery from? From where did this desire come to defy the Greek orders? And from where did this rational people engage in something that was completely irrational, going against logic, taking up arms against this huge legion of Greek soldiers? So the seeds of the Nes Chanukah already happened generations before. Now, again, this is not an exhaustive list of allusions to Chanukah in the Torah. There is so much more. When I started preparing for this, it just kept snowballing and snowballing and snowballing, and there is so much more. We didn't even touch upon Yosef because we touched upon that a few years ago at length. We didn't touch upon that. Another allusion, which we're also not going to really speak about, but I just want to mention, is Aaron HaKohen. We know that there's a connection between Aaron HaKohen and the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash and the Chashmonaim and the menorah that we like today. Okay, I just want to gloss over that, but definitely worthy of discussion. But another thing that I'd like to talk about is that we see that the seeds of Nes Chanukah have been planted many years before. And if you look at source number 6, the Pasuk in Shemos tells us, source number 5, B'yom HaChodesh HaRishon B'chad LaChodesh Takimas HaMishkan. On Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there was the dedication of the Mishkan in the Midbar. And in source number 7, the Yalkut tells us that actually, Amar B'chanina B'chof HeKislev Nidmaram Melechas HaMishkan. Actually, the Mishkan was not finished in Nisan. It was actually finished on Chaf Hei Kislev. But what happened? The Mishkan stayed folded until Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that's where the dedication was. And then, V'hayu Yisrael merandin al Moshe lomar, lama lohu kama Mishkan miyad? Why is it that the Mishkan is not being dedicated now? They had this intense desire to use the Mishkan, to utilize that Mishkan. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because skipping to the end, Alay l'shalem lo, mashi lem lo, chanukas pashmonai. It could be that I have a different version of it than what I have here, because there's different versions, so I'm not sure. I read it from my notes. The point being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay back, so to speak, Chodesh Kislev, because in Chodesh Kislev was when the Mishkan was actually completed, but it was the Chanukas HaMishkan was delayed until Nisan for other reasons, as it says there, which we're not going to go into. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry, because you have such a desire to see this Melechas HaMishkan come to its fruition, I'm going to pay back Kislev, and there will be a rededication of the Beis HaMikdash during the time of the Chashmonaim. So Mordechai Druck explains in his Sefer Drush Mordechai that Chaf Hei Kislev was destined for great things. Why? Because of the intense desire and longing that B'nai Yisrael had to do the Chanukah HaMishkan. They were impatient. They wanted to see the Simcha. They wanted to see the dedication and utilize that Mishkan that represented Mamad Har Sinai. But that longing did not go to waste. That longing facilitated and gave root to the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash during the time of the Chashmonaim. The point being that another theme of Chanukah could be the overriding strength or perseverance that we have. That's what Chanukah teaches us. It's a drive. It's to be goal-oriented and to show a tenacity and a determination.
Excuse me, Rabbi, what would be the connection when you always talk about Chanukah, and they talk about the Prophet, I mean, about Yaakov?
So we're talking about that right now. That's where we're getting to it. See? That was the most unbelievable connection that I found. It's a really, really beautiful connection. There's an unbelievable, powerful medrash that has been brought down by many Sfarim, and I have to be honest that I tried to find the actual source of this medrash. I couldn't find it. And from what I've seen, other people bring it down, like the Shach, who's from, I think, the 1400s, 50, other people, other sources bring down this Medrash, and it could be that this Medrash is not available to us today. But I saw this brought down in many, many, I guess you would call it secondary sources, but I just want, it's an unbelievable connection. So there's this powerful Medrash that's been brought down that draws, as you said, the connection between Yaakov Avinu and the Nes of the Pach Shemen. How so? So this Medrash alerts us to the determination of the Chashmonaim that bravely followed, and they somehow inherited this bravery and this determination from Yaakov Avinu. Let's look at source number 7. This is after Yaakov has his dream, and he's by this Evan. Vayashken Yaakov baboker vayikachas ha'evan asher samer ashasov vayasam asam atzeva vayitzok shemen al rosha. Yaakov woke up from the dream and he saw this was a very, very holy place, obviously, and he poured oil. He poured oil over this Eben. It's a way of Zakarbon. It's a consecration. He knew that it was a holy place. And the question is asked, from where did he get this oil? And the Medrash brings down, and I have this on source number 8, that's brought down in the Sefer, I think it's on source number 8. It's brought, he says, Rav Druk brings it, Drash Mordechai brings it down from the Tosefus, from the Tosefus HaShalem. Shamakel shalo haya chalul v'haya bo shemen kedei lilmol Torah. Where did he get this oil from? Apparently he had some sort of flask of oil hidden inside the halal, in the hollow of his staff. Remember we said, we were going to say later on, Yaakov's going to daven to Hashem, and he's going to say, kiva makli avarti es hayardein, right? I passed over with my staff. This staff had a hollow in it, and somehow there was some flask of oil inside this hollow, and he used it to learn Torah by the light of the fire that he made with the shemen. Now, what does this mean that he learned Torah? I'm sure he didn't have piles of sfarim near him. Whatever that means, that he connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he connected with learning, whatever that means when we say that the Avos learned Torah, if they wrote things down, but he used it in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at night. May HaShemen Hazeh, it's fascinating, listen to this. May HaShemen Hazeh Mashach Moshe Rabbeinu Sam Mishkan V'Kelav. From this Shemen, Moshe Rabbeinu anointed the Kelim in the Mishkan. Al HaShemen Hazeh Elisha Mar Pach Shemen Lo Tichle. It was this Shemen that was in the possession of the wife of Ovadia HaNavi, with which Elisha did the miracle. V'HaShemen Hazeh HaShemen Shemitza Chasum B'Chosam Moshe Kohen Gadol B'Chanukah. It's with this Shemen oil that was found with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, v'zeh haShemen shimshach bo Mashiach la'asid lavo. Okay, unbelievable. The same Shemen was used throughout the generation. Now, I'm going to quantify that in a moment. There's also another Medrash that says that this Shemen had some miraculous qualities to it, because there's another Medrash that's brought down that actually this Shemen refilled miraculously. Yaakov saw that it was empty and it refilled miraculously, and he knew there was something very, very special about this Shemen. So, the Rav David Hofstetter has in his Sefer Drash David, a very, very, very beautiful book on the Moedim, he says it's not so much that we don't necessarily have to say that it was the exact Shemen that was left and passed down from generation to generation. That's quoting the Shach, the Sifsei Kohen says that. He also speaks about this idea. It's one of many, many sources. He says what it can mean is, because really you can't anoint Mashiach with oil that was already used. So it can't mean literally. But what it means to say is that the oil shared some of the same qualities. That some of those same roots that we see with Yaakov Avinu using it to consecrate the Evan, and Yaakov Avinu later on, if you look in that same source, 7a, later on when he comes back, after living with Laban and his whole family in the altercation with Esav and Dina, then again, what does he do? Vayetzad Yaakov Matzeva Makom Asher Diberto Matzeva Eva Vayasech Alel Nesef Vayitzok Aleha Shemen. So he's using the Shemen to anoint. So what he says is, there's something in the quality of the Shemen that's represented by Yaakov and his using of the Shemen that passes down to Moshe Rabbeinu, that passes down for the generations to the Hashmonaim, to the wife of Ovadia. So what is this connection? So let's plow a little bit further. It seems that this jug of oil was so precious to Yaakov, understandably so, if we say that this there was something very special about the Shemen, because when we read Vayivaser Yaakov Livado, what does that mean? Rashi tells us why was he left alone? He brought all of his family, this week's Parsha, he brought all of his family over and provided protection for them because he knew Esav was coming, and then he was left alone. Why was he left alone? Because he went back for those pachim ketanim, right? And the Das Akenim says, "Don't that vayivaser Yaakov levado, al tikri levado, ella lechado, for his vessels, right? He went back to retrieve his vessels. And the Megala Amuko says this as well, and the Shlah as well, vayivaser Yaakov levado, al pach shemen shel Hanukkah. There is this connection between Yaakov going back for his pachim ketanim and the pach shemen of Hanukkah. There's a connection between everything. And Rav David Hofstetter points out that the connection seems to be the dedication and the Mesiras Nefesh. And he points out, we see the dedication, Mesiras Nefesh, from Yaakov, when he did that he displayed Mesiras Nefesh by engaging in the entire masquerade of acquiring the brachos at his mother's direction, which forced him to be on the run. We see that he had Mesiras Nefesh from using that Shemen to learn Torah at night, right? Whatever that means, time of the Avos. And the third is that he risked his life to go back and retrieve that oil, we can say, so that he can use it again to consecrate the place where he would return after he had this altercation with Esav. He used it. He poured Shemen over that place. And the Maharshal says, "V'chishu matzinu shakadosh baruch hu, amar lo liyakov, atom masarta nafshecha al pach katan bishvili. You were mosar nefesh for this pach katan that you saw had special qualities. V'gam ani ba'atzmi ashlim levanecha b'pach katan." So let's try to understand this. So even if we've never heard of this medrash that there was oil and this oil miraculously refilled, and he actually went back. That he actually went back for some pach and katan, and whether or not they were full of oil or not, the message is still the same. Let's try to explore this a moment. Rashi explains the idea of Yaakov going back for pach and katanim, right? And then and then Chazal tell us this very, very famous idea, which is very troubling, right? There's a lot of discussion. Why did he go back for those pach and katanim? Mikan letzadikim shechaviv aleihem amona migufam. Because tzadikim are very careful with their money. Right? Why? Because they don't engage in any dishonesty, in any stealing. And there's much discussion around this Rashi. Was Yaakov greedy? Was he miserly? He would risk his life? We know there's a lot of discussion. But if we look at it from this perspective, these jugs of oil, or we can say these jugs or these vessels, you can take out the oil if you'd like because the lesson is still the same. They were very, very special in Yaakov's eyes because these vessels were part of his possessions. And as such, if they are part of his possessions, then they were given to him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was discussing this with my brother, Avi Feldman, and he said he heard years ago, who is the Rav in Florida? Oh, gosh.
Zwei?
Yes, thank you. From Rabbi Zwei. He says he remembers this very clearly. He said it's a sacred trust. Those were the words he remembered Rabbi Zwei using. It's a sacred trust. Meaning if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you something, it means it is given. If you own something, it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given it to you. It's yours, and it's a gift from God. And how could you forget it? How could you disregard it? Of course, from here comes the whole discussion of Baal Tashas, which we're not going to get into. But the idea being that when a tzaddik, what tzaddik's outlook is that whatever I have is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, whatever I attained, I got it through honest means, number one. Number two, I'm using it for a specific purpose to serve God. And number three, it's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could I forget it? Even pachim ketanim. God ordained that I have it that way, which means, by extension, if I look at everybody else's possessions, I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to them as well, and there's no room for dishonesty. So that's what it means, ein poshtim yadeim begezel. If you have this outlook, there's no room for dishonesty, because what I have is mine, and God gave it to me. What you have is yours, and God gave it to you. So now, how does this relate to everything? Yaakov went back to retrieve these vessels, because despite its small size and small monetary value, its value was immeasurable. Why? Because it was a gift that was given to him from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pachim Kitanim implies that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has hashgacha on every aspect of creation. Every aspect of creation in the world, even the minutia, even those Pachim Kitanim, which is why, explains Rav Yosef Salant in source number 11, I copied it for you, when it says, Vayivaser Yaakov levado v'yavek ish imo. What does that mean, v'yavek? What does it mean, v'yavek? Comes from the wrestling. It means wrestling because why? Because you kick up dust when you wrestle. But another idea, says Rav Yosef Salant, is so beautiful. V'yavek symbolizes the dust, the seemingly insignificant things in our lives. And this really characterize the debate, Vayavek Ishimo, the great philosophical divide between Yaakov and Esau. Sorry. The dust represents the minutia, the small, tiny, and seemingly insignificant things in our lives. The Sarshal Esau, who really can be explained as a Yetzer Hara, the Satan, whatever it is arguing with Yaakov, Vayavek Ishimo. They're arguing over Avak. Over Avak, which is represented by this Pachim Ketanim. And he says, God doesn't care about the Pachim Ketanim, about the small things. You went back for Pachim Ketanim? Why in the world would you do such a thing? You think that God cares about the little things in your life? But Yaakov's philosophy is, yes, The small, insignificant things are the domain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. Whether I lose my keys or I don't have a parking space, I miss my appointment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mashgiach on the Pachim Ketanim. And this connects to the Pach Shemen during the time of the Chashmonaim. Why? Because whether it was the actual Pach Shemen that initially belonged to Yaakov, or symbolically, or whether or not it was the oil or not, the lesson is the same. Because it's what that Pach, it's what those Pachim Ketanim represented that connects to the Pach Shemen in the story of Hanukkah. The Chashmonaim drew strength from Yaakov's attitude. The difference between the Greek outlook and the Jewish outlook is that the Greeks, who were intellectually sophisticated, could not wrap their heads around the fact that the Jew believes that God cares about the small things in our life. Those pachim kitanim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mashgiach on every creature, from the smallest of amoeba to the most sophisticated and enlightened of individual. That was antithetical to their philosophy, and the Chashmonaim fought against this ideology. The Greeks made us write on the horn of an ox, Ein lanu chelek b'Elokei Yisrael. There's no hashgacha pratis, you're a pure little nation. You think God cares about you, you patim ketanim? No, this is the divide, and this was the hashgacha pratis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Klal Yisrael. There is hashgacha pratis, and there is such a thing as a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle with one lone jug of oil, a pach katan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mashgiach on this pach katan, and from there lit the flame that really illuminated the darkness for Klal Yisrael. That pach katan lifted the shroud, where B'nai Yisrael indeed felt the hashgacha pratis. Vayivaser Yaakov Livado. Yaakov was an individual, a lone voice that really needed to battle a huge evil force around us. That's really the Jewish people. Vayivaser Yaakov Livado. We're a lone voice of morality in a sea, in a darkened time. B'mekom she'einish, right? Yaakov stood up. He isolated. He was the minority opinion, starting from the time of Lavan. It's not easy, but a person has to take it upon himself to combat that negativity and to stand tall and proud and tap in to that Mesiras Nefesh and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that winds its way all the way back to those Pachim Ketanim of Yaakov Avinu. What's fascinating is that when we think about, we talked about this Medrash, that there may have been some Shemen in the possession of Yaakov Avinu, but certainly we see that Yaakov used Shemen to consecrate two places, right? We just showed you two places where he poured Shemen after his dream, right? It says, Vayasam Osam Atseva, Vayitzok Shemen Al Rosha. And then the next time was after his altercation with Esa, Vayasach Aleh Nesach, Vayitzok Aleh HaShemen. We see Shemen features very, very prominently throughout our history, whether it's the Shemen HaMishcha, whether it's the Shemen that was poured over the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, whether it was the Shemen that was poured over Leviam, whether it was the Shemen that was found during the time of the Chashmonaim to light the menorah that represented the Torah and Or, or whether it would be the Shemen that would be used to anoint the Melech HaMashiach. The idea of Shemen perhaps represents the idea of something that is l'malam min HaTeva. The number 7 we know represents Teva according to Maral. And 8, Shemona, represents something that is l'malo min ha-teva. Shemen has the same letters as Shemona. Shemen, which was used throughout the generation, represents that Klal Yisrael's existence is l'malo min ha-teva. That's why we exist. And this unbelievable, miraculous existence that we have, it's unbelievable, as we said. Hanukkah is not celebrated by military parades or shows of strength. Hanukkah is celebrated. It focuses on the miracle of the oil, and we reenact that menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. We reenact that lighting in our Mikdash Me'at, in our homes. Hanukkah, we said it's a very personal, it's very private, yet we do publicize it, but the etzem is done in the home. Hanukkah, aside from the root word of dedication, also has the root word of chinuch, of education. Although, right, there was a battle on the battlefield. The battle was not about land or money or power. The battle centered around the Torah and the ability to transmit that Torah in the home from parent to child, from parent to child. And those Hanukkah lights remind us of the importance of rededicating our commitment to our chinuch. And the chinuch doesn't end just because our children are out of the house. right? The chinuch in the home, because the chinuch, a home, a strong home, creates a strong people. There's, know that B'nai Yisrael are compared to a Yonah. And this we learn from many places in Shir HaShirim, and this is something that Rabbi Pinkus brings down, relating to another reference to Hanukkah, Shishim Hema Melachos in Shir HaShirim. And the Targum goes explains that this is referring to, this pasuk is referring to Matisyahu, the Hashmonaim, and he says that B'nai Yisrael are compared to a Yonah. Why? Because once, even though the Yonah leaves, the Yonah always returns to its mate. It always returns to its partner. So too, the Jewish people, a Jewish person, no matter how far a Jewish person may have drifted, in times of danger, times of near death, a Jew will utter the word Shema Yisrael. And a Jew who has never, ever even heard those words, Shema Yisrael, may ask at least for a Jewish burial, because we are like the Yonah. We come back, Yonasi, Tamasi, we're always going back to our mate. We have that little, as we say, the Pintel Yid inside of us. There's a beautiful, you know, that's really what Chada Hashmonaim fought for. They fought for that connection to the home, that connection to us connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the home and our roots. There's a beautiful story that I saw. I actually saw two versions of the story in different places. So it's slightly different, but it's general. It must have happened, but I think the story must have had a number of permutations, but the end is the same. There was an account about 100 years ago of a man that had to go collect funds. I believe he was living in Israel, according to one of the versions, and he ended up in Italy. And he had to collect funds, and he was Erev Shabbos, and he had nowhere to go, and he didn't know what he was going to do. And he ended up in a marketplace, you know, like the fish market, and there was all of a sudden this very well-appointed carriage showed up with this very obviously wealthy man, and he was buying fish, and it seemed that this man was a religious man. And he's, listen, if he's buying fish, you know, on Thursday night, this wealthy man, it must be that he's an observant man. And he asked him if he can come for Shabbos, which he did. And his host was very gracious, and he goes into the house, and he sees this unbelievable palatial home, this well-appointed home with all of his beautiful furnishings and decorations, etc., etc. But something was very, very odd that stood out in this home, and that was very, very prominently displayed in a case was what seemed to be broken shards and pieces of a bottle. And it looked very greasy, something very strange about this bottle. And he summoned up the courage to ask his host, what is this? What is this bottle for? Why are you displaying this so prominently? And he says, I'm going to tell you a story. He says, I used to not be observant. I grew up in an observant family. My parents were religious, were very religious, but then I had to go into the family business. One version says his father died, another version says something else. But I had to go into the family business, and I had to travel a lot. And slowly but surely, I lost my connection to my roots. But one day, I was in a Jewish shtetl, some sort of Jewish village, and on the floor, I see this little boy. This little boy is crying, and next to him are broken pieces of a bottle. And his heart filled with rachmanis for this boy, and he remembered back to his time when he was a little boy, and he looked religious. And he sat down next to this little boy and he said, why are you crying? And he said, my father saved up so much money. My father saved up money for so long in order to buy oil for Hanukkah, because tonight is Hanukkah. He sent me out to the village, to the market, to buy oil to light the menorah. And I tripped and I fell. And look, this is what I have. I have no more money. How could I go back to my father and tell him, we can't do the mitzvah of Hanukkah. We can't light the menorah. So this man said, he saw this boy and he was full of rachamim for him. He said, I'm going to give you money to buy, not just one bottle of oil, but whatever you need. And he bought him this bottle of oil. And he said, then and there, he realized, he went back to his roots, and he remembered the Hanukkah menorah that he would light. And he remembered what the boy said. He said, how can I go back to my father without the oil to light the menorah? In turn, he said, how can I go back to my father in heaven without lighting a menorah? And then and there, he told this man, I decided that I was going to take on religion again, and I was going to become observant. And I have this bottle, this broken bottle, to remind me of my roots and how we can forget it, but how we always go back. Yonasi Tamasi. So with that, I hope that in Yirat Hashem, we can remember what Hanukkah is about. Hanukkah is about remembering the importance of chinuch in the home to build strong homes. Doesn't stop when we have grandchildren. I hope not. And that home is the fulcrum of that ability to pass on from one generation to the next. Let's recall the allusions to Hanukkah from the very beginning. The Choshech al Penei Sahom, the Choshech Shehekshichu Einayim Shel Yisrael, that the Greeks wanted us not to identify with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we don't have a special relationship, but Vayihi Or, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought that Or. Let's remember Hadudaim Nasnu Reach Recham Al Pesachinu Migadim. We publicize that miracle because we are publicizing that extra neshika that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Let's remember the difference between Shem and Yafes, and that Shem Yafta Lokim Li Yafes Vishkom Bahle Shem, that superficial beauty is there to use, to get into something more internal, to the panemius, and to invest our mitzvah observance with something more panemiastic, with more emotion, and to not judge things in a superficial way. Let's remember that connection to those pachim kitanim that Yaakov taught us about, that determination that he had from learning with the light of that Torah, that determination that he passed on, and the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashgiach over even the pachim kitanim. And Amir to Hashem, we should all be able to celebrate Hanukkah with our families and be able to continue to pass on the Masorah. And Amir to Hashem, we should be able to see the lighting of the menorah in the third Beis HaMikdash. B'mheira v'yameinu, amen.
Amen. Thank you.
I just want to thank today's sponsors for the shiur: Leah Lightman, Esther Kaufman, Rose Bernstein, Jane Seideman, Lisa Reich, and Ellie Schlamm. Thank you so much, and may all this Harbatzas Torah that you facilitate be a zechus for you and your families.